Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph by the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, "Shor shehu muad lemino, ve'enu muad l'she'enu mino." It is a muad for its species or its type. Ve'enu muad l'she'enu mino, and for another type or another species, it's not a muad. Muad le'adam, ve'enu muad le'behema. It's a muad for goring, injuring people. Ve'enu muad le'behema, but not for animals. Muad le'ktanim, ve'enu muad le'gdolim. The way Rashi interprets it is, within the same species, within the same animal group, he has a muad to injure the younger ones, like the calves and the kids, but not the cows and the goats. Others say that muad l'ktanim, ve'en muad l'gdolim, is a categorical difference, which is that he only injures smaller types of animals, whereas he doesn't injure larger types of animals. Etchu muad lo, mishalem nezek shalem. Whichever item or species or group that he is a muad for, he's going to pay nezek shalem for. Ve'echeinu muad lo, mishalem chatzi nezek. And that which he's not a muad for, he's going to pay half nezek. Amru lifnei Rabbi Yehuda, the Talmidim said to Rabbi Yehuda, our Gemara has the Mishnah saying harei zeh, which helps to understand a little bit in the Gemara because it flows that way, but in the Mishnah, the Mishnayot says, harei shehaya, muad l'shabbatot, ve'enu muad l'chol. It was a muad to gore on Shabbat, but not on weekdays. What's the din with regards to that? Amar lahem, l'shabbatot mishalem nezek shalem, l'motachol mishalem chatzi nezek. For Shabbatot, when he gores on the Shabbatot, he's going to pay the full nezek. When he gores on the weekdays, he's going to pay half nezek. According to the Rashash, the main question here is, what is the driving force behind the ha'adah here? Is it the day itself, or is it the interval between the days, meaning that every seventh day that this is happening? And the nafkamina between those two is whether it would take three to establish a pattern, which is if it's got to do with the day itself, then you'd only need three. Whereas if it's the interval, meaning that it's the 7 days, 7 days, 7 days, then it would take four times to establish three intervals of 7 days. Whereas according to the Rukh Yosef, the real question that's being posed to Rabbi Yehuda is the problem that in the sequence, it seems like that he can't be a muat. Because in this case, if he gores on Shabbat, and then he has 3 days of the weekdays where he didn't gore, that makes it as if he's reversed that, or his behavior is not that of a muad. Then all of a sudden he gores again on Shabbat. So why is he a muad if in the interim or the yemei chol in the in-between he is not goring? As the Nemuka Yosef says, Shashelaita dilma yemoto chol delo nagach vehen satri lenikichot de Shabbat delifnehem. And what is unique to Shabbat that is making him into a muad? So that's what Rashi and the Balei HaTosafot answer over here. Balei HaTosafot quote the Yerushalmi that says that on Shabbatot, lefi shirah otam b'mabushim na'im acherim, because he sees the people wearing all this nice clothing and it's different than the normal clothing that they wear, is chashuvim b'enav nachrim v'enam akiram. He doesn't recognize the people. He doesn't think that he's in the same place or dealing with the same people. And that's what causes him to be a mu'ad on Shabbat. Other than Rashi suggests the reason is, l'fishu batel mimalacha. He doesn't work on Shabbat. He has more free time on his hands. He has more energy. And therefore, v'zacha dato alav, he feels a little more free, a little more loose, and he gores on Shabbat because of that feeling. And you could suggest that the nafkamina between Rashi and the Tosafot's reasoning is whether it's applicable to behemoth. According to the Tosafot that quotes from the Yerushalmi, seemingly it's only relevant by people who wear different clothing. Whereas Rashi's reasoning about the fact that he is free from work would have equal application to people as it does to have to behemoth. And that's what the Tosafot Rabbeinu Peretz say over here, that reason of the Yerushalmi is only applicable by people. Now, what's interesting about that is that it would then have application to not only Shabbat, but it might have application also on Yom Tov. Because on Yom Tov, you also wear Mabushim Naim, and on Yom Tov, you also desist from Melacha. So if the reasons of the Balei Tosafot and Rashi are correct, if he was a Muad the Shabbat, maybe he should also be Muad for Yom Tov. That's not so clear. It's a Machloket. The Shitu Mekubetz, it brings down Rabbi Shaya that says that that's not the case, that this does not have application by Yom Tov. We cannot extend that which is by Shabbat to Yom Tov. On the other hand, the Rashash proposes that maybe that would be the case, that by Yom Tov it would have the same din because of the reasons brought by Rashi and the Balei HaTosafot. The truth is that Shita of Rabbi Shaya and the Shita of Mikubetzet is really saying that the reasons of Rashi and Tosafot are not the main reasons over here. And that is proven by the next statement in the Mishnah as to how you back out or reverse what is done beforehand. And that is, they asked him, Imatai Hutam, how does he become a Tam? Mishiach Zorbo Gimel Yimei Shabbatot. When he goes three Shabbatot without goring. So that's what the Baya Tosafot, the Shita Tam, say, Itzrich. You need this, the Salkadatcha, Ho Velav Mu'adah L'Shabbatot, Lo Bayi Chazarah Kolkach. You don't need such a big return or reversal of the situation because he's only doing it on Shabbat. And Leperisha Kuntris Necha. And he says, for Rashi's explanation, it makes a lot of sense because he says the whole reason that he's in Mu'ad is because he's resting. The Kamash Malan, that Afilu Shabbat mi Malacha bi Mechov no Nagach lo v'yachazara, that if he rests from work on a weekday, that would not be considered a reversal, or that's not the same. So there's something unique about Shabbat and the desisting from Malacha on Shabbat that makes him gore. And just because during the weekday he wasn't doing any work and doesn't gore, that's not evidence of the fact that he wouldn't do it on Shabbat. So there you have, almost in a sense, a reversal or a backing away from the reasons of Rashi and the Tosafot. Because if Rashi's reason was really true, then it really should be a reversal when he doesn't work during the weekdays. So the answer is no, it's really Shabbat and the lack of work that does it. The same thing with the Balei Tosafot. If it's the nice clothing, if one day everybody's going to a wedding and wearing nice clothing, he doesn't gore anybody. So that should also be a reversal. The fact that we don't say that shows you that Shabbat is important. And for that reason, there are those that want to suggest that the real reason behind why he is Mu'ad the Shabbat has to do with the fact that he is now being Koveya, that on the same day of the week, he is goring on a regular interval or regular basis. And so it's not particular to Shabbat, it's just particular that every 7 days he gets an itch and he wants to gore. And therefore it's specifically correlated with that day or that Shabbat and not necessarily all these differences that we're speaking about in Shabbat. So that difference in how you view it would also impact on whether you think Yom Tov is impacted by this or not. If you really think Rashi and Tosafot's reasons are the real reasons here, then Yom Tov should be in play just like Shabbat. On the other hand, if you think that their reasons are just secondary, and it's really about the day of Shabbat or the interval of Shabbat, then it would be irrelevant that it was Yom Tov, because it's really about every 7 days or every Shabbat that is driving this action of the Behemah, and therefore it would not be necessarily correlated with these particular reasons. They're nice reasons, and they're helpful for understanding it, but it's not the sole or main reason for the fact that it's on Shabbat, and that's why it requires three Shabbatot of a reversal in order to make him into a Tam. And that's the proof of the Rabbeinu Yishaya B'Shita Mekubetzet, that the real reason is that it's happening on a recurring basis on the same day rather than the particular nature of Shabbat. So now the Gemara says, Itmar, if a machloket amoraim, as to how to understand the Mishnah. From the machloket amoraim, it looks possibly that they had a difference in girsa in the Mishnah. The Rashash argues that they didn't have a difference in gear, so it's simply a difference in understanding of how to read the Mishnah. But Rav Zvid says, Ve'eno mu'ad t'nan. When it says in the first case in the Mishnah, when it says, Shorshu mu'ad l'mino, Ve'eno mu'ad l'sh'eno mino. There's a vav there. Rav Papa Amar, Eno mu'ad t'nan. There is no vav there. The difference being, Rav Zvid Amar, Ve'eno mu'ad t'nan, Hastama havi mu'ad. That you have to bring evidence to the fact that he's not a mu'ad. That means that in the first instance, when he's mu'ad for lemino, for whatever animals or whatever items that are in that category, he's automatically, the default is he's now a mu'ad for everything. Unless, ve'enu mu'ad. Unless you show me or you have evidence of the fact that he's not a mu'ad for a particular item. That's the way the Rav Zvid reads it. Rav Papa Amar, enu mu'ad t'nan. The stama lo avi mu'ad. If you're mu'ad for one particular type, species, or animal, then that's all you are mu'ad for. The default is that you're not a mu'ad for the others until proven otherwise, until we have some evidence to the contrary. So Rav Zvid, Deyek Miseifa, and Rav Papa, Deyek Miresha. Rav Zvid learns it out of the Seifa, Diktani. Mu'ad Diktanim, Ve'enu Mu'ad Gdolim. In the Sefer of the Mishnah, it says that he is a mu'ad for those either smaller animals, according to Rashi, the younger versions in that group. Ve'enu mu'ad l'gdolim, and he does not have a shame mu'ad for the bigger animals or for the more mature animals. Inamart Bishlama, if you said Ve'enu Mu'ad Ktani, it's coming to tell you that you have to prove that. I mean, that the default status would be if he was Mu'ad Ktanim, he would also be Mu'ad Gdolim. But the Mishnah is saying if he's a Mu'ad Ktanim and he's not a Mu'ad Gdolim, meaning that he saw Gdolim and he didn't gore them, Hasta may have a Mu'ad, but the default status is that he's a Mu'ad across the board. Hakamash Malan, Dafilo Miktanim Ligdolim, Nami Mistama have a Mu'ad. The Kamash Malan of the Mishnah is that it's teaching you this Chiddush, that when he is a Mu'ad for Ktanim, he is also a Mu'ad for Gdolim, and that is an automatic or extrapolation of his status of a Mu'ad from Katan to Gadol, and that's what the Mishnah is teaching you. Eliyah Mart, if you learn like Rav Papa that Enu Mu'ad Ktani, it means that the default is you're not a Mu'ad, meaning that if you're a Mu'ad for a Katan, you're not a Mu'ad for a Gadol. So that would mean Enu Mu'ad Ktani Stama Lohavi Mu'ad. Hashta yesh lomar miktanim liktanim de'alma stama lohavi mu'ad. In a case where it's a katan to a katan, in general, we said that it's not a mu'ad. That's the first case of the Mishnah. The first case of the Mishnah is mino and le'enu mino. So over there, we're suggesting that even if they're the same size, the animals, or they're both youngsters, we don't say that just because you're a mu'ad for calves means that you're a mu'ad for kids or that you are mu'ad for lambs. So if that's the case, then you need to tell me, miktanim l'gdolim tzricha l'meimar, d'lohavi mu'ad. You have to tell me that just because he's a mu'ad for a lamb, a calf, or a kid, that he's not a mu'ad for a cow, a sheep, or a goat. That would be obvious. If animals are the same size, we do not extrapolate and say that because he's mu'ad for one, he's mu'ad for the others. Then certainly in the case where you're talking about different size animals or a totally different categorical size of animals, then of course he should not be a mu'ad, and there's no chiddush in the Mishnah or in that part of the Mishnah. Rapapa amar lecha. Rapapa says, no, there is a chiddush. It's drich zalka datcha mina ho paretz bei, baho mina paretz bei. Since he already breached or has shown us an affinity for this type of animal, so then it doesn't matter. Once he's broken that barrier and he starts to gore or injure those types of animals, he does not differentiate. Lo shnak dolim didei, v'lo shnak nanim didei. You would think that that would mean that it's a free-for-all on those animals, meaning that he's a mu'ad across the board for those animals. Kamash malan, dolo avi mu'ad. That's the kamash malan, or the chiddush, according to Rav Papa in the Mishnah, is even though here there's a possibility of thinking that mu'ad should have a broader application, even though in general, if you're mu'ad for one item, one species, one type, that's all you're mu'ad for, nothing else. Over here, there's a reason to believe if you're mu'ad for a calf, then you should be mu'ad for a cow, because a calf-cow, it's all the same species, maybe that should be enough. Along comes the Mishnah to tell you, no, that's not enough, that a calf and a cow are different, just like a cow and a goat are different. So now, Rav Papa, diek mi reisho. Rav Papa, on the other hand, is medayek out of the reisho. Tani, mu'ad adam, eno mu'ad l'beima. If you're mu'ad for people, you're not mu'ad for animals. Inamart bishlama enu mu'ad tnan. If it reads in the Mishnah like I'm saying, which is that's the default, that because you're mu'ad for Adam does not mean you're a mu'ad for behema. So the default is that you're not a mu'ad for behema. Then I understand. Ishlama enu mu'ad tnan stama lo avi mu'ad. And the default is that you're not a mu'ad. Hakamash malan. That is teaching you the afilu mi'adam le behema. Even from people to behemot, nami stama lo avi mu'ad. So in that instance also, you're not considered to be mu'ad, or the default is that you're not a mu'ad, even though there's good reason to believe that if he gores people, that he certainly will gore animals. As Rashi notes over here, we saw this earlier in the Masechta, that adam itlei mazla, that people have mazal associated with them. So there's more reason to believe that the animal would shy away from injuring human beings. And that's the nature of the animal as well. It's not to injure human beings in general. With other animals, he's more likely to do it. So if you tell me that he is a mu'ad la'adam, and by default, he's also not a mu'ad la'behema, that's a chiddush already. That's something that you're teaching me, because despite the fact that he's broken the barrier and become a mu'ad la'adam, we don't say that automatically makes him into mu'ad la'behema. Eliyah Mart, ve'enu mu'ad ktani, if you learn like Rav Zvid, that it means that unless you prove otherwise, a mu'ad adam is a mu'ad beima, ha'stama havi mu'ad, so that means the default status is a mu'ad, ha'sha yeshlamar mi beima lebeima, stami havi mu'ad, in the first part of the Mishnah, where you said that if it was mino, and eno mino, that meant that if it was a mu'ad for a min, it's automatically a mu'ad le'eno mino, unless you can prove otherwise, or unless he demonstrates that he's not a mu'ad there. That means from one species of animal to another species of animals, we automatically extrapolate his being a mu'ad. Then certainly, madan le'be'emad, tzvichad le'emar, davi mu'ad, you'd have to tell me by a person going to a behema that is default or automatically or extrapolating his din of mu'ad. Of course, that would be the case. So you don't need that part of the Mishnah, then it's not a chiddush. Rav Zvid is going to answer you, Amalecha, Reisha Chazarakai, that Reisha is talking about a reversal of his position as a mu'ad, kagon. For example, Davi mu'ad Adam, u'ma'ad le'behema. It was the case where he was mu'ad for everything, Adam and behema. V'hadar be'mi behema. And then he reversed by behemot, meaning that now he starts bumping into animals, and he doesn't gore them anymore. V'kai gavi behema tlat zimne. There was an he appeared, or he was in company with animals three times. V'lo nagach, and he didn't gore them. Maudatema, what I've thought is, kevin delo hadar be'mi adam. Since he's not reversing his behavior with regards to people, chazar de behema lav chazari. This partial retraction of his state or his classification of mu'ad is not meaningful, because he was completely a mu'ad for Adam and Be'ema, so this reversal of Be'ema maybe is meaningless in the context of being mu'ad Adam. Kamash Malon, he learned the chazarat Be'ema, mi'al chazarihi, that reversal by the Be'ema is sufficient to tell you that is a reversal, and that's what it means here, that mu'ad Adam ve'eino mu'ad Be'ema. It's a case where he's mu'ad Adam, and he's demonstrated that he's not mu'ad Be'ema. The default would have been that he was mu'ad for both. But now he's demonstrated that he's not a mu'ad for behema, and that means that he's only reversed the behema aspect, not the adam aspect. And the kamash malan is that you could do something like that, or something like that is relevant enough to classify him as not being a mu'ad. Meitave sumchus omer mu'ad adam mu'ad behema mikal v'chomer. Sumchus says that if you're a mu'ad adam, you're automatically mu'ad behema from a kavachomer. Mal adam mu'ad behema lo koshikein. That if for an Adam you're a Mu'ad, then certainly for Behema you should be Mu'ad. Meaning that basically what we explained before, that if he's already crossed over that line and he's injuring people, then certainly he's going to injure animals and there's going to be no deterrent from him injuring animals and he should be a Mu'ad for everything. Michlau, if Sumchus says that, then that implies that the Tanakama ain't a Mu'ad Kamar. That the Tanakama believes that that's not the case. That means that the Tanakama thinks that it's not the case. And that's against the position of Rav Zvid. Remember, Rav Zvid said that if you are default a mu'ad for any type or species, then you are automatically a mu'ad lakol, unless you can demonstrate otherwise. But now the Tanakama, against this position of Sumchus, who argues on Sumchus, is saying that that's just not true. Sumchus says that that's true, that there's an automatic extension of your mu'adut for an Adam to Behema, but that's not true according to the Tanakama. But according to Rav Zvid, that is the default. The default is if you're mu'ad adam, you're mu'ad for everything. You're mu'ad the behema. So then, why does the Tanakhama say this? Some of the Rav Zvid, sumchus achazarakoi. So sumchus is speaking about reversal. And this is similar to the way that he explained in our Mishnah, that's the chiddush here. The halchi kamar lei the Tanakhama. This is what sumchus is explained to the Tanakhama. The kamart. Chazara de behema chazarahi. You said that if he's a mu'ad adam and behema, which is the natural default status, if he's mu'ad adam, he is mu'ad behema. And then when he demonstrates that he's not mu'ad behema, or he's trying to reverse that status with regards to behema, that it works. That's what we saw the Mishnah was saying. That's what the Tanakhama says. Sumchus comes along and says that's not correct. Chazara de behema, love chazarahi, mikal v'chomer me'adam. He says the reason that it doesn't work is because your reversal with regards to behema is not significant enough or not sufficient of a reversal because you have a kal v'chomer me'adam. He didn't reverse his behavior with regards to human beings, then certainly he didn't reverse his behavior with regards to animals. Again, goring people is a much higher threshold. And if the animal continues to gore people, then you can assume that he'll gore animals. And his reversal with regards to animals is not koveya, is not determinant over here because of the fact that he's still goring people, he's still injuring people. And that demonstrates or shows that he's still a shor mu'ad, even for behemoth. And so Sumchus disagrees with the Tanakhama with your ability to segregate these different areas and say that I can reverse a portion, I can reverse the behema, despite the fact that I'm mu'ad adam. And that's what Sumchus is disagreeing with and saying that that's not the case. As long as you remain a mu'ad adam, your reversal with regards to mu'ad the behema is not relevant or not significant. Omar Ravashi, Tashma. Amru lifnei Rabbi Yehuda. This is the latter part of our Mishnah. Harizeh mu'ad l'shabbatot, ve'enu mu'ad l'imot achol. That is, it mu'ad to gor on Shabbat, and not on weekdays. Amar lahen, l'shabbatot mishalem nezek shalem, l'imot achol mishalem chatzi nezek. Then he pays full nezek when he gores or damages on Shabbat, and he pays chatzi nezek when he gores or damages on a weekday. I'amart bishlama, if you explain the Mishnah like Rav Zvid, ve'enu mu'ad k'tani, and it means ve'enu mu'ad, then the Talmidim are asking Rabbi Yehuda a question. They're saying to him, listen, if he's a Mu'ad l'Shabbatot, and not a Mu'ad l'Chol, because he demonstrates that he's not a Mu'ad on the weekdays, is that considered to be a Mu'ad for Shabbatot? Because maybe the weekdays are considered to be enough of a reversal that the Shabbat itself is not considered to be a Mu'ad. So maybe the interim days where he doesn't gore is enough a reason to believe that on the Shabbat, his behavior is not a consistent behavior, but more of an erratic behavior. And that's what they're asking him. Is that the case, that the weekdays, or the intervening weekdays, ruin his mu'adut l'Shabbat, or not? And then Rabbi Yehuda responds to them, and says, yes, that is the case. You can't be a mu'ad l'Shabbatot, even though in the interim weekdays, he is not behaving that way, or he's not acting in a consistent fashion of goring individuals. But if you say enu mu'ad k'tani, that by default, that the other scenario or the other type is not considered to be a mu'ad, then it's strange what they're saying to him. In the case that you learn like Rav Zvid, they're saying to him, listen, for Shabbat, he is a mu'ad. By chol, he's demonstrated that he's not a mu'ad. What's the din? But if you learn like Rav Papa, that when you're mu'ad for Shabbat, you're automatically not a mu'ad for chol, then what are they saying to him? They're saying to him, oh, he's a mu'ad to Shabbat and not chol. Of course he's not a mu'ad to chol, because he's only a mu'ad to Shabbat. He didn't gore during the weekdays. Agmurehu de kamagamrele? They're teaching Rabbi Yehuda the din, that when on Shabbat you're a mu'ad, that means on chol you're not a mu'ad. Vitu? And even more so, iu ma'ka mahadalu? What is he answering them in that instance when he says, yes, he's a mu'ad to Shabbat and not a mu'ad to chol? That's the default status, according to Rav Papa. If he was a Mu'ad Shabbat, of course he's not a Mu'ad Chol. So Amar Rav Yanai, Mreisha Nami Deiko. From the earlier part of the Mishnah, it's also Mduyak, that it's like Rav Zvid. Diktani, et she mu'ado mishalem nezek shalem, ve'et she'enu mu'ado mishalem chatzi nezek. It says at the end of the first section of the Mishnah, whatever you're a Mu'ad for, you pay full nezek. Whatever you're a Tam for, you pay chatzi nezek. I'amart bishlama ve'enu mu'ad k'tani. If you learn like Rav Zvid, that means that by default, if you're mu'ad for one item, you're mu'ad for everything, unless you demonstrate that you're not a mu'ad for a particular category. Perushe kamer farishlo. Then that part of the Mishnah is explaining the earlier part of the Mishnah and saying that if you're mu'ad for some things and then you have demonstrated behavior that you're not a mu'ad for the others, then the din is for those things that you're mu'ad for, you pay nezek shalem. Those things that you're not mu'ad for, you pay chatzi nezek. Ela iamart einu mu'ad k'tani. If you say that he is not a mu'ad, pasko, that's a definitive psak halacha, that means that he's not a mu'ad, meaning that in the case where he's a mu'ad l'mino, he's automatically einu mu'ad l'she'enu mi'ono, because that's the default. The default is that he's not a mu'ad. Then the statements in the Mishnah are definitive halachot that says that if you're a mu'ad for this, you're not a mu'ad for that. If you're a mu'ad for this, you're not a mu'ad for that. My v'tu, then what do you need this additional statement in the Mishnah? Et she mu'ad lo mishalem nezek shalem, v'et she'enu mu'ad lo mishalem chatzi nezek. Then what does that statement help you with? Ad hashto lo ashminan? We didn't hear this. We don't know this information yet. Da'ata mishalem chatzi nezek, mu'ad mishalem nezek shalem. We don't know already that a mu'ad pays nezek shalem and a tam pays chatzi nezek. You don't need a Mishnah to tell you that. Because again, it's not referencing the earlier part of the Mishnah. The earlier part of the Mishnah is not teaching you any Chiddush. It's teaching you simply that if you're mu'ad for this, you're not a mu'ad for that. If you're mu'ad for this, you're not a mu'ad for that. In that case, you're basically saying, I have a mu'ad and I have tam. And then the Mishnah continues to say, oh, well, a mu'ad has this din, a tam has that din. We know that already. That's not teaching or adding anything. If you learn it like Rav Zvid, which is that the default status is you're mu'ad for everything. And then it says, if you're einu mu'ad for these particular items, the fact that we treat you like a tam, and then we make it into chatzi nezek, shows you that there is meaning to the fact that, despite the default status of being a mu'ad, you're able to reverse that or undo that for particular areas where you demonstrate behavior that is not like a muad. Bimtim Salomar, Nami Ita the Rapapa. If you want to say that Rapapa can fit into the Mishnah anyway in that section of the Mishnah, this is the way you have to explain it. Nagach Shor, Chamor Vigamal. He was Nogeach, three different animals, a Shor, a Chamor, and a Gamal. Nase Muad Lakol. He becomes a Muad for all animals. Because of the fact that he demonstrated no discernment or differentiation in the animals, and he just gores whichever animal he sees, then that already makes him into a mu'ad, but a mu'ad for any behemoth, for any animal that comes into his path, he's going to gore, and therefore he is a mu'ad lakol. So now over here, you actually have a machloket as to what it means when you say mu'ad lakol. The Rambam says in Mishnah Torah, when you say that he's a mu'ad lakol, that means for all of these three minim. Mu'ad lakol means he's a mu'ad for shor, chamor, and gamal. For these three types, or these three animals, anything in that category will be a mu'ad. And the chiddush is that you don't have to do it three times with the shor, three times with the chamor, and three times with the gamal. But you still are only a mu'ad, lakol, meaning all of the behemot listed here. On the other hand, the Raifid, in his glosses over there, notes that when it says mu'ad lakol means literally he's a mu'ad for everything. That once he demonstrates behavior that does not discern, that means that he's really indifferent. Doesn't mean that he's only a mu'ad for these three types of animals, but rather, he's a mu'ad lakol. He's a mu'ad for anything. This is a behemoth that just gores anything it sees. All right, so now, going back to understand what is the fundamental machloket here between Rav Zvid and Rav Papa, it has to do with what it means to be a mu'ad. Is being a mu'ad a shame that classifies the animal as being a mu'ad? And once you get that shame mu'ad, then that sticks with you, or that status sticks with you, and it affects anything unless you demonstrate otherwise, and that's what determines that you are a mu'ad. Or is it that the shame mu'ad that a person gets is once you've damaged? You have to demonstrate behavior that makes you into a mu'ad. So what Rav Zvid is saying is that once you've already become or classified as a mu'ad, mu'ad is a status that you acquire. And once you've acquired that status, that is your genre, or that is what you are as an animal, you are a mu'ad. Mu'ad will be then indifferent between what or anything that you touch is automatically, you are classified as a mu'ad with regards to them, because you've already demonstrated that behavior in one area, or with one species, or with one particular type. That already makes this animal into a shame mu'ad. And since it is now of a status of mu'ad, that mu'ad now permeates anything it touches or anything it's involved with. And that's why Rav Zvid says that mistama, or the default, is that once you demonstrate that you're mu'ad for one, you're mu'ad for everything, unless we have evidence to the contrary. On the other hand, Rav Papa says that mu'ad is a determination for behavior. It's a demonstrated behavior that makes you into a mu'ad. It's not a status that you attain, but rather, it's once you've gored three times, you become a mu'ad for goring these three times. And that can only be established min by min. That can only be established by each species or each type or each category. You have to demonstrate, or you have to act in that way to be classified as a mu'ad. The mu'adut is connected to the negichot, the fact that you're actually goring. And so the goring itself is what makes you into a mu'ad, not the fact that you are classified or your shame is a mu'ad. That also might explain within the shita of Rav Papa, or the understanding of Rav Papa, the Tosafot and the Raivid, which we mentioned before, that Raivid understand that within Rav Papa, that there's yesh shem chalut mu'ad alav, ela she'enu mishalem nezak shalem, achi befo'al yeh muchzach, so what they're saying is that you are a mu'ad, and you have a shame mu'ad according to Rav Papa, but you don't extend that shame mu'ad to other categories until you've demonstrated behavior that makes you into a mu'ad, or gives you a chazkat mu'ad. Whereas the Rambam believes that there is no chalut shame mu'ad v'gabei behemot acherot ad shigachutam, that there is no shame mu'ad according to Rav Papa until you actually or actively gore those other behemot. And that leads to the difference in their positions with regards to here. When in Rabbah's position, we said that he was nogeach, a shor, a chamor, and a gamal. So for the Baliat Tosafot and for the Raivid, who say, see within Rapapa a animal that is now classified or has the status of Muad, just like Rav Zvid says, he's a Muad and he has a Chalut Shem Muad, Rapapa just has another step or threshold you must cross, which is not only have you demonstrated that you have a Shem Muad, but then you have to take that latent status of Muad and then put it into force to obligate you to pay Nezek Shalem. So here, where you gore three different animals, you've now demonstrated that that Shem Muad is not limited or not unique to a certain group or species. And because of that, your Shem Muad now spreads and makes you obligated for Nezek Shalem with regards to everything. On the other hand, the Rambam believes that you can only acquire, according to Rapapa, a Shem Muad if you gore three times. And until you gore three times, you're not going to be a Muad. So here, where you gored these three animals, those three animals are what are you going to be a Muad for? The other animals doesn't have any relevance because there's no category of status of Muad according to Rav Papa. Since there's no status or category of Muad according to Rav Papa, you can't extrapolate or have a default by which just because he's a Muad for these means that he's a Muad for the other items. And so because of that, the Rambam views Rav Papa's dinir of Nagach, Shor, V'chamor, V'gamal is being limited to those three animals. Whereas the Tosafot and the Raivid, who see Rav Papa as being a little closer to Rav Zvid, which is that the animal attains a Shem Muad when it acts in a manner that makes it into a Muad by goring one species of animal three times. You just need now a way to extend that to the other categories by making you Chayav Nezek Shalem in those other areas. This type of behavior of goring three different animals is that type of behavior which will allow us to extend or expand that Shem Muad more broadly. And once you've done that, it would be inclusive of all species or all types of animals, not just limited to these three types of animals. Tanu Banan, Ra'a Shor Nagach. He saw an ox and he gored it. Shor, he saw another ox, and Lo Nagach, and he did not gore it. Shor, he saw a third Shor, Nagach, and he did gore it. Shor, he saw a fourth Shor, Lo Nagach, and he did not gore it. Shor, he saw a fifth Shor, and Nagach. Shor, and then he saw a sixth Shor, and Lo Nagach. Nase Muad, l'serugin, l'shvarim. He becomes a Muad on alternating Shvarim that he sees. I mean that every other Shor that he sees, that's what gets him upset, and that's when he gores. So he becomes a Muad. So that means that if he gores number 7, he'll be Chayav Nezek Shalem. If he gores number 8, he'll be chayav chatzi nezek, because of the fact that every other shor he's classified as a muad for, and then the alternate shor he'll be classified as a tam. Now, as the Baliat Tosafot point out over here, the last one we need, the fact that he didn't gore the last one, is because batra denakat kadei shoim gach la'altar mishalem nezek shalem, that if he had not done that, and he had gored a third one already, then he would be a Shor Muad immediately because of the fact that he's now got three gorings that are taking place in a short period of time, indicating that this is a Shor Muad. And those skips or those alternations before were not meaningful because now he's going to have three in a row and that's going to make him into a Shor Muad. So the last Shor, Shalom Nagach, is what establishes here that there's alternating Shvarim. 3, 1, 3, and 5, he's a Muad. That means all odd-numbered Shvarim, he'd be a Muad for. And 2, 4, and 6, he's a Tam for, and that means all even-numbered Shvarim, he will be a Tam for. Now, according to Rav Zvid, what's the story here? The Gemara here says that he is a Muad l'Shvarim. According to Rav Zvid, by default, if it's a Muad l'Shvarim, he's a Muad for everything. The Tosafot over here says, V'yesh lomar kigon sh'ra'ah shar behemot v'lo nagchan, that in the interim, he was seeing other animals and not goring them. So the Tosafot, in order to make this fit with Rav Zvid, says that he must be seeing animals in the interim that he's not touching, and that's why he's only a Muad l'Shvarim, and not Muad for other animals. The default is he's not Muad for other animals. That difficulty that Tosafot raised in Rav Zvid leads many of the Rishonim, including the Rif and the Rambam and others, to Paskin like Rav Papa and say that the Gemara now, or from here to forward, is working within the Shita of Rav Papa and is really ignoring Rav Zvid. And this case is an example of that, where it doesn't really consider the Shita of Rav Zvid. Later on, we'll see that the Baalei Tosafot disagree with that and say that halacha could be like Rav Zvid, and Rav Zvid could fit into this Gemara. Tan Rabbanan. Ra'a shor, nagach. He saw a shor, and he gored it. Chamor, and lo nagach. He saw a donkey, and he didn't gore it. Sus, he sees a horse, nagach, and he gores it. Gamal, then he sees a camel, lo nagach, and he doesn't gore it. Pered, he sees a mule, and nagach, he gores it. Arod, and then he bumps into an arod, and lo nagach, and he doesn't gore it. Rashavir says an arod is a chamor bar, it's a wild donkey. Arod in other places in Shas, the Gemara in Tanit, with regards to Rabbi Chanina Mendoza, makes it sound like an arod is some sort of scorpion. So arod has different meanings in different contexts, maybe, or it's not clear what the arod is. Maybe it's just animals that are dangerous or that can cause fatal injuries. Maybe that's what the arod is. But in any case, here, every other animal he gores, but there's no consistency in the animals that he gores on the every other time. Over here, it becomes a mu'ad on alternating animals, lakol, for any type of animal. Once again, over here, you have that same machloket we said before, but between the Rambam and the Raivud. When we say lakol over here, according to the Rambam, means for any of the animals that he gored. That means that the shor, the sus, and the pered, for those three animals, he'll be a mu'ad, according to the Rambam, according to the Raivud. And I'll show you in a second the Baalei Tosafot. He's a mu'ad, the kol means literally all animals. And Tosfot says over here, al korchach, b'shelo ra'a bintayim klum. It has to be a case where he's not seeing animals in the interim, or in between. Di ra'a, lo avi mu'ad, the kol, the sirugin. Because if he sees other animals, and he's not goring them, then he's obviously not a mu'ad, the kol. So that shows you that what the Tosfot believes is that the kol here means literally every animal, not just the three animals here, but every animal, because had he spotted other animals in the interim and did not gore them, that would already make him not a mu'ad lakol, because he's demonstrated behavior where he's not mu'ad for those types of animals. And again, what does Rav Zvid do with this? Rav Zvid, this is obvious. Of course he's a mu'ad lakol. Once he's a mu'ad, then he becomes a mu'ad lakol. B'yesh lomar, Tosfot says again, the kasar Rav Zvid, the rabuto kamash malon, that there is a chiddush here, the sakadat chobedahanach mine de chaza, Velo nagach lo avi muad, velav b'sirugin talya milta. Then maybe Rav Zvid, you could learn the Gemara here that he's really just a muad for the animals that he saw, which makes him into a madakol. And the three animals that he didn't gore, those animals will be the exception to the rule, and not the even animals that he sees. So that's what the chiddush here is according to Rav Zvid. Inami b'shash nagach gimu minim halalu hayu lefanav minim harvei. When he gored these three types, there were many other animals present at the time. Belonagach ela elu, and he only gored these particular animals. Da'ashtaim ayu shloshtam shvarim. If there were three shvarim, hayiti omer kevin dechol sham zuman ligach shvarim. Umeniach sharminim ein muad ligach ela shvarim. Then I would have thought he's only muad. Aval hashto aval gimel minim. Now you have three different species. Echad mehem nogach veino choshesh ligach ela echad. That here, he's only going after those animals and not everything. Maybe over here, you would say that doesn't extend to lakol. It doesn't become the default status of the animal. The kamash malan is that even though there are other animals sauntering around and wandering around, when he already gores three different animals in this type of interval or pattern, then he is a muad for any animal in this pattern. So that means that again, the odd animals that he bumps into, he'll be a mu'ad for. The even animals that he bumps into, he'll be a tam. And again, the kol will be a machlok between the Rambam, who says the kol means for the animals that he has gored, whereas for the Raivit and the Baalei Tosafot we just saw, is that he is a mu'ad lakol, literally, for every animal or all animals, he becomes a full-fledged mu'ad. And then we have to explain in these cases, what's the chiddush, or what does it mean for Rav Zvid? Yivailo. Now the Gemara has a series of questions. Nagach, shor, shor, vishor. He was gored three oxen in a row, then a chamor and a gamal. And then after that, he also gores a donkey and a camel. Mahu, what's the din? Hai shor batro. The third shor that he gored, where do you place him? So you think about it, you could break the pattern up into two sets of three. You could have shor, shor, shor. If you do that, then he becomes a mu'ad l'shvarim. Or you could break it up as shor chamor gamal. And we just saw, if he gores a shor chamor gamal, he becomes a mu'ad l'kol, defined by the Rambam and the Raivit, each one respectively, as how do they define that? So which one is it? Haishor batra, batar shvarim shadin and lay? Do we throw it together with the shvarim? Vakati l'shvarim hu di'ayit, the mida achrina lo yayit. So then he'd be a mu'ad exclusively for oxen, but not for any other animal. Odilma haishor batra, batar chamor v'gamal, shadin and lay. We put it together with the latter two gorings that he did. V'yayit lay the kulemine. And therefore he is a mu'ad for all species. Now Rashi claims that the next piece of the Gemara is imtim salomar. If you want to say that once he begins with shvarim, we put that together, whatever you begin with, we stick it together, and therefore there are three shvarim over here, let me give you another scenario that would be the opposite of the case before, and adds in a dimension that would make it questionable over here. You can see that Bali HaTosafot also says the same thing, v'nira l'ri, v'imtim salomar, that all these questions are imtim salomar, and that is, the next case is chamor v'gamal, shor, shor, v'shor. He gores a donkey, a camel, and then three oxen. Mau, what's the din? Hai shor kama, the first shor, batar chamor v'gamal shadinanay. Do we connect it with the first two animals that he gored? And therefore, yayid le dekulu imine. Now he's a muad dakol. Odilma batar shvarim shadinanay. Maybe here we put him together with the oxen at the end, the same species. Vakati le shvarim hu diayid, le min achrina lo yayid. And therefore it'll be a muad for oxen, and nothing more than oxen. And again here, this would sound like the Gemara is following the Shita of Rav Papa over here. According to Rav Zvid, it would be indifferent between whichever way he became a Mu'ad. Once he's a Mu'ad, the default is that he's a Mu'ad for everything. And that's what the Rif says, that this whole Sugi is the Shita of Rav Papa, and therefore we pass him like Rav Papa. If you look in the Bali HaTosafot, they say a similar thing that they said in the previous Amud in defense of Rav Zvid, or explain the Gemara according to Rav Zvid, is Kagon. Those would add in additional environmental factors that allows Rav Zvid to also be the author of this position, which is that while he was goring these three oxen, there were other animals present, or in between. He saw animals and he didn't do anything about them. And in the second question, he saw animals in between the goring of the shvarim in the back half. And therefore now you can explain the whole sugya according to Rav Zvid, and it's not exclusively within the shita of Rav Papa. Tosafot also points out that there's a chiddush here, and if you read it as an imtim salomar, you have to think that the second question is different than the first question. Why does changing the order make a difference? So the Bayit Tosafot point out that in the first case, you have the same species, as well as the first gorings going together, which is that shor, shor, v'shor, those first are the first gorings that he did, plus you have it be the same species. So that would be more reason to say that in the first case, we would paskin that it's a shor, 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 that he's a mu'ad l'shvarim, and that's it. Now then, once you've reversed it, you've taken away one of those factors. And you've said, well, the first gorings involve a chamor and a gamal. But the other side of that, or the factor weighing against that, is that I have three of the same species put together. So which one of those trumps? That's the question. Then we move on to the next question, which is, according to the Ri, again, an imtim salomar, which is that over here, if we suggest over here that again, shor, shor, shor is the one that we follow, and he's only more the shor, Shabbat, Shabbat v'Shabbat, Echad v'Shabbat v'Sheni v'Shabbat mahu. If he gores one Shabbat, second Shabbat, third Shabbat, and then he gores on Sunday, Monday, right after that third Shabbat. Ha Shabbat batraito, that latter Shabbat, batar Shabbat hu deshadin lei, we connect it with the previous Shabbatot, bakati le Shabbat hu deyayit, demotachol do yayit, and therefore he's only a mu'ad for Shabbat and not for weekdays. Odilo batar echad b'Shabbat v'sheni b'Shabbat shadin lei. Maybe we connect the Shabbat to the latter two gorings and say that it's Shabbat, Sunday, Monday, and now he is a mu'ad for all the days of the week because he's indifferent. He just did it on Shabbat, Sunday, Monday. There was nothing unique about them, and he's goring just daily. That is, he's a mu'ad for any day of the week. So that's the imtim salomar, or as the Tosafot points out, the chiddush in adding this case is that in the first instance, we're talking about species, we're talking about animals. So over there, you can suggest that the connection between the animals, the shvarim, is what binds them together, or that's what makes it that they are a grouping that you would segregate and say it's special or unique. On the other hand, when you're talking about Shabbat, it's hard to argue that that's a grouping that should automatically or by default be put together versus having a bit Shabbat, Sunday, Monday. Why is Shabbat any more so that you would group them together versus Shabbat, Sunday, Monday? Then, in a similar fashion, we would ask in the next case, which is, Hey v'Shabbat, v'Erev Shabbat, v'Shabbat, if you gored on Thursday, Friday, and Shabbat, and then the subsequent to Shabbatot, Mao, what's the din? HaShabbat kamaita butter Hey v'Shabbat, v'Erev Shabbat, shadinan lei. That first Shabbat, do we connect it to the Thursday, Friday, Shabbat? V'yayi dekule yome, and therefore he's a muad for any day of the week. Odilma HaShabbat kamaita butter Shabbatot hu deshadinan lei. Or maybe that first Shabbat, we put it with the latter two gorings, which were also on Shabbat, and we make a grouping of Shabbat. U'Shabbatot hu d'yayid. And therefore he's a mu'ad for Shabbat. Teku. We leave it as unresolved. How far back the teku goes depends on how you read it. Again, if you read it as an imtim salomar, it's a possibility that the Gemara did conclude in the earlier cases, and says, like the Rambam believes, when you say imtim salomar, that means that we've accepted the previous halacha, or psak, and now we're moving on to the next question. If that's the case, if it's all in Tim Salomar, the take was only on the final case. If you don't think it's an in Tim Salomar, but each question can stand independently, or by the fact that the Gemara itself doesn't say in Tim Salomar, then the take would go back on all the cases here, and then we'd be unresolved with regards to any of the situations here. Right now, the Gemara moves on to a sugya that connects us to Nida and to Veset of a Nida, which is, Nagach Shor Yom Ted Vav B'Chodesh Zeh, V'Yom Ted Zayim B'Chodesh Zeh, V'Yom Yud Zayim B'Chodesh Zeh. In the first month, he gores on the 15th of the month. In the second month, he gores on the 16th of the month. And then on the third month, he gores on the 17th of the month. Zehu Plokto D'Rav Shmuel. Whether this animal is considered to be a muad at this point is subject to the machloket of Rav and Shmuel that we find by Nida. Didmar. Rata Yom Ted Vav B'Chodesh Zeh. If a woman has her menstrual cycle on the 15th of one month, the Yom Ted Zayim B'Chodesh Zeh, the subsequent month she has it on the 16th, and the Yom Yud Zayim B'Chodesh Zeh, then on the 17th in the third month. Rav Amar Kavala Veset. Rav says she's established a pattern of behavior now, which is that every month she adds on a day to her cycle. That in the first month it was on the 15th, and now it's sliding. So the second month it's on the 16th. And then the third month it's going from the 16th to the 17th. So she's having a cycle that is moving, but it's not necessarily fixed in nature, but is in a pattern that we can recognize. And therefore Rav says, that's a veset. Shmomar ad shitishalesh bidilug. Until you have three times for the interval. What Shmuel in essence is saying is that the pattern here is basically, we'll call it a 31-day pattern. It's not necessarily a 31-day pattern because some months are 30 days, some are 31. So when you're giving dates that move like this, you're not dealing with equal intervals between them. But what Shmuel is saying is that what you're trying to establish here is a behavior or consistency of behavior. The first time is not a marking of consistency of behavior, but rather it's the benchmark for the items that come afterwards. So to contrast that with the situation in which a woman sees on the 15th of the month, and then the next month, the 15th, and then the next month, the 15th, then the first 15th was relevant because that's what is the kviut of her cycle, of her veset, is that every 15th of the day of the month, she sees her veset. And so that would be the first, second, and third are all demonstrating that behavior. On the other hand here, the behavior that we're trying to demonstrate is that she has a sliding veset, which is that she goes from 15 to 16 to 17 to 18. In that case, the 15 is not significant because the 15 is relative to nothing. It's what establishes the benchmark or the starting point. And so Shmuel says, because of that, you need to mishulash bidilug. You need three intervals. You need four data points with three intervals in order to establish a veset. And that's what he argues on Rav. So now, if you bring that back to our case, the same thing by the shore. The shore that gores on the 15th, 16th, and 17th, according to Rav, he's a muad already, because he's already got three data points with that understanding, with that behavior. According to Shmuel, he needs one more data point in order to establish, because the first one just started, gave you the starting point. It did not establish the pattern of behavior. And so that's what the Baalei Tosafot point out, that this machlok between Rav and Shmuel is uniquely in this case. In a case where she had it on Tet Vav, everybody would agree that you only need three times, and the first one counts. In an instance where she has her cycle every 29, 30, 31, 32 days, even Rav would agree you need four data points to do that. Because there you're trying to establish the interval as being the kviut, or the consistent pattern. She's consistently seeing it at 29 days, or consistently seeing it at 31 days. So you would need four data points to establish that interval three times. So even Rav would agree in that case that you need four data points to establish it. Their machloket is uniquely in this scenario, where it's the 15th, 16th, 17th, which is somewhat connected to the date of the month, somewhat connected to the interval. And so because of that, Rav believes it's more tied to the date of the month, and therefore three data points is sufficient. Shmuel says it's more connected to the interval between them, and therefore you require four data points before you are a muad. And then Tosafot points out at the way end, he says, Ufize, based on what I just explained to you, Im nagach yom echad, v'yom bet, lo nagach, he gores the first day on Sunday, and then on Monday he desists. Yom gimel nagach, on the third day, on Tuesday, he's nogach. Yom Dalet, on Wednesday, lo nagach. Yom hei nagach, on Thursday, he is nogach. Yom vav, lo nagach, and then on Friday, he's not. Ein aseh mu'ad l'kulei alma, ash yishalesh b'dilug. He does not become a mu'ad until you now have a fourth time in the pattern, because everybody agrees, and this is what we pointed out just before, that even Rav agrees when you're trying to establish patterns of intervals, that, of course, you need four data points in order to establish the interval three times. Ve'en arishunim min aminyan. And the first two times, being the Sunday and Monday, where he gored on Sunday, Monday he didn't, that was not a part of the count here. That just established for us that there is a pattern that is then being followed afterwards. And then we need three repeats of the pattern in order to establish the fact. It says, v'teima, the only problem with that is what we just saw in the previous amud. It said, ra'ashor v'nagach. Rashor v'lo nagach. Harishon min aminyan. Over there, we do count the first one, even though he's doing something in a patterned nature. He says, "B'tzarich lechalek ben serugim shel yamim leserugim shel shvarim." Says you have to differentiate between alternating days versus alternating animals. When it comes to alternating days, then the pattern that you're trying to establish is important, so that the first ones aren't going to count because you're dealing with time intervals. And therefore you need four data points to establish the pattern or the intervals. And then when you're dealing with animals, then every other animal is not necessarily connected to time. It's not connected to a specific pattern of intervals, but rather simply, he does, he doesn't, he does, he doesn't. And for that reason, the first time that he does and doesn't will count towards the three to make him into a muad. Right, so that's what the Baalei Tosafot do in narrowing the machlok between Rav and Shmuel over here. Now, what's interesting about this is that the way we explained that he is Ashit Tishalesh B'dilug, we explained according to most of the Rishonim, which is that until you have a fourth time and three intervals, you haven't established a pattern. Now then, the Rabbeinu Chananel over here explains Ashit Tishalesh, meaning that you have to have this pattern recur three times, which means that you have it on the 15th, 16th, and 17th of the first 3 months. Then she has to repeat that pattern again in the subsequent 3 months. Again, 15, 16, 17, and then the 3 months after that, 15, 16, 17, and then one more time, 15, 16, 17, meaning that it'll take 9 months to establish this pattern, and not simply 3 months, or according to the way that we explained, 4 months to establish the pattern. There are those, because of Tosafot's question, or the problem of the difference between the Shvarim that we saw before, where we allowed you to count the first one, and the case by Nidah, where we don't count the first one according to everyone. Some say that the Gemara's bringing of Nida over here is not an exact connection between the two, but rather just demonstrating a paradigm that we could use over here, but not to say that the dinim are the same, or the way that you establish a chazakah is the same. Now, by Nida, the reason to establish a cycle, or when a woman has a veset, what that means is that, number one, is that she would expect to see dam, or have her menstrual cycle on that date. And that means that if she does not check, we assume she is Tmeya, and that she is a Nida, unless she proves to us otherwise, unless she does a check that shows that she's not a Nida, or she didn't become a Nida on that date. Number two is that if she has a sighting on that day, we assume that her menstrual cycle began then, and we don't worry about retroactively assuming that she was a nida prior to that point in time, which is a takanat chachamim in the Gemara Nida, which is called me'eit le'eit, that for the 24 hour, 4 hours beforehand, when she's a nida, we assume she was tmeya, or anything that she worked with is tamei. That is only true when she has an erratic cycle. If she has a fixed cycle, then we are going to assume that the dam comes at the time that it's supposed to come, and therefore, when she cites it on that day, we assume that's when it came, and that there is no need for this retroactive tuma. The third thing is that if she starts to see it on another day, she will still have to worry about these days, because she already has established a chazaka about these days, until she establishes a different pattern or a different chazaka. If she starts to have erratic sightings as well, she'll have to be choshesh both for the erratic sightings and this day that is fixed until she either breaks the pattern and there's no longer any cycle at all, or she establishes a different cycle which undermines the first cycle. So all of those are nafkaminot, the relevance of the fixed cycle of the nida. And now, Amar Rava, Shama kol shofar v'nagach. If an animal hears the shofar, or a trumpet, or some loud noise, and then it goes and gores. Kol shofar v'nagach, kol shofar v'nagach. This happens three times. Naseh mu'ad l'shofarot. Then he's a mu'ad when there are loud sounds, or when the shofar is blown. This animal is known, or is a mu'ad, for going out and doing damage. When it says pshita, why would you have thought otherwise? It's pretty clear that you just established a pattern of behavior. When it says ma'adu tema, hach shofar kama siyuta ba'almahu. I would have thought the first time he heard the shofar, it was something that engendered fear or scared the animal. Siyuta, like the modern day siyut, is a nightmare, but it is something which is a sudden fear that descends on the animal. So the first time he heard it, he was caught off guard and he was scared. And that's what caused him to gore. But then again, if we see him do it the second time and the third time, then we already know that maybe it's not the shofar that caused this fear, but rather the shofar itself, or the blowing of the shofar, is what generates this behavior amongst the animal. So that's Mother Demak Shofar Kama Siyut Ba'amo, the Nakte, that he was overcome by fear, Kamash Malan, that we don't look at the first shofar in that way, but we look at it as a pattern of behavior connected to that noise of the shofar. The truth is that that could be what's precipitating it. I mean, it could be that the shofar makes them scared, and that being scared makes them gore. But once we see that behavior happening over and over again, we can't say that the first time it was quote-unquote erratic or a result of the fear of the shofar, because he's showing or demonstrating consistent behavior in this manner. And for that reason, we would assume that it is a chazaka anytime that there is a shofar, then he will gore. Okay, the next Mishnah says, Shor shel Yisrael, shenagach shor shel Hekdesh, v'shor of a layperson damages a shor of Hekdesh, or a shore that belongs to Ekdesh, that damages a layperson's shore, patur, there is no culpability in either direction. Shenemar, shore re'eu, v'zlo shore shel Ekdesh. This is a miut that we saw earlier in the Masechta, which is that when it speaks about the damage that shvarim do, it uses a terminology of shore re'eu, the shore of his friend. So re'eu, it comes to exclude Ekdesh. And that's why the dinim of Nezek are not applicable by Hekdesh. Because it says in the Pasuk, V'hi gof shor ish et shor re'ehu, umeit machru et ashor achai v'chatsu et kasbo v'gam et amet yechatsun. O no da ki shor nagachu mitmol shushom lo ishmerenu balav shalem ishlem shor takar ashor v'amet yelo. So the first part on the first Pasuk that I quoted over here spoke about a shor tam, and in describing shor tam it says, V'hi gof shor ish et shor re'ehu. Now, in the earlier part of the Torah, in Pesukim earlier, it also mentions V'chigach shor et ish o et isha. And over there it says, V'hu'ad be'balav, you have to warn its owners, V'lo yishmerenu, V'emit ish o et isha, Hashor yisakel, V'gam balav yumat. So over there you have certain things that must be done to the owner of the shore. So V'hu'ad be'balav and V'gam balav yumat are only relevant when you're talking about private ownership. That doesn't make sense when you're talking about Hekdesh owning something. And so that, according to some of the Rishonim, is the reason that Hekdesh is excluded from these dinim, is because of the fact that the dinim that are brought in the psukim are not relevant to a shor hekdesh. Sorry, now the Mishnah continues. Shor shel Yisrael shenagach l'shor shel Kanani patur. A Jew's shor that damages a Canaanite shor, patur. The Jew is exempt, does not have to make payment or restitution. V'shel Kanani shenagach l'shor shel Yisrael. On the other hand, if it is a shor of the Canaanite that damages the shor shel Yisrael, ben tam ben muad, whether it's a tam or muad, v'shalem nezek shalem. He's obligated to make full restitution compensation to the Jew. This Mishnah, of course, caused great difficulty for the Jews through the ages and brought to a lot of consternation with regards to this seeming bias that if it's a Jew's property that's damaged, then we do collect. And when it's a Canaanite's property, we don't give payment, we don't make restitution. I'm going to defer the discussion about this till tomorrow, where the Gemara deals with it in more depth. We'll see the Shittim Kvetzet, the Meiri. The only thing I'll note over here is the Rambam that is brought down. You can see the Ot Aleph and Ot Bet. Over here in both cases, they quote the Rambam to tell us that, first of all, that the law or the code for Canaanites was that if your property did damage, you were not responsible for it. What the Rambam is suggesting is that we do for them what they would do for themselves. They would not obligate a party that was damaged by the person's possessions. So too, we're not going to obligate a person whose possessions damaged the property of the Canaanite. But in reverse, knas zehu leKnanim. The reverse, or why we make them pay when their animal damages the animal of a Jew, is because that's a penalty, that's a fine. Because im lo techayev al nizkei behem tam, if you don't obligate them to pay, ain mishamrim otam. They're not going to guard them. They're not going to stop them. Umafsidin mamon abriot. They're going to ruin it for everybody. Meaning that this is a fine that the Beit Din imposes on the Kanani in order to encourage or facilitate his watching or keeping of his shore away from doing damage. So we want to precipitate a certain type of behavior, and then we're going to obligate him to pay for damage that's done in order to have him rethink the situation and make sure that he doesn't let his animal damage. So the way the Rambam solves the problem of the Mishnah is to, first of all, say partly what we'll see in the Gemara tomorrow, but to say that with regards to the damage to the Kanani, we treat them like they want to be treated. The Jew in general is under the auspices of the Beit Din, under the laws of the Torah that require him to guard or watch his animal, and therefore we don't worry about his behavior or putting a knas on him. But the other way around, where the Canaanite does the damage, we want to change his behavior. We want him to watch his animals now and not allow them to do damage. The only way we can do that is by fining him. The fine is that he has to pay for the damage that he did. And once he pays for the damage he did, that will be a dissuasion from him continuing in this way or not providing proper protection for his animals. Now, Matnitan Delok Rav Shimon ben Asya. Our Mishnah is not like Rav Shimon ben Asya. The Tanya, Shor shel Edyot, Shnagach Shor shel Ekdesh. The layperson's shor damaged that of Ekdesh, Shor shel Ekdesh, Shnagach Shor shel Edyot. Or if it's a Ekdesh shor that did damage that of a layperson, Patur. In either way, you are Patur. Shnemar, because the Pasuk says, Shor Re'eu, Velo Shor shel Ekdesh. It's your friend's shor, and not the shor of Ekdesh. Rabbi Shimon ben Asya Omer, Shor shel Ekdesh, Shnagach Shor shel Edyot. If it is the Ekdesh that's doing the damage to the layperson, Patur. Mishel Edyot, on the other hand, if it's a layperson, She Nagach Shor Shel Ekdesh, that does damage to the Shor of Ekdesh, Ben Tam, Ben Muad, Mishalem Nezek Shalem. Whether it's a Tam Muad, you pay full Nezek. So what Rabbi Shimon ben Asya is basically saying is, yes, you have a miut in the Pasuk of Re'eu. Question is, what does that miut do? Again, the Gemara, one second, the Gemara will go through this in more detail. But does that re'eyu mean that the layperson does not have the same din with regards to Ekdesh as he does with his interactions with other lay people? So that could mean that he is completely exempt here because there's something different about Ekdesh. Or it can be the other way around, which is that he might be completely obligated. That's what Rav Shimon Asya suggests, that he is not, or he's not granted the exemptions of Chatzi Nezek, and he has to pay full Nezek to Ekdesh. Amrei. Micah Sava Rav Shimon, what is the Shita of Rav Shimon ben Asya? What is behind his position? I Re'eu Davka, if he believes that the word Re'eu means literally then afilu shel hejot shenagach shel hekdesh, then even a lay person sure that damage zera hekdesh lipater should be exempt, should not have to make payment. Ve'i rehu lav dafka, if you say rehu is not literal, and therefore rehu is all inclusive, including even hekdesh, then afilu hekdesh nami kinagach de hejot lechayev. That even if a shor of hekdesh damages a shor of hejot, it should be chayav. V'chitayim al olam kasava rehu dafka. And if you want to say that he really believes that Re'eu is dafka, meaning that it's to the exclusion of other items, umiyu dehejot. But nevertheless, when a lay person's shor kinagach dehegdesh goes ahead and damages that of hegdesh, hainu taima de mechayev, why is he obligated in that case to make payment? Mishum de kamait delay bekavachomer dehejot. Because it's a logical argument that comes through a kavachomer. Umayajot shenagach shel hejot. Lay person that does damage to another lay person, chayav, then he's on the hook or he's chayav. Kinagach dehekdesh, no kosh gain, the mechayev. When he does damage to the shore of hekdesh, then certainly he should have to make restitution or payment over here. Then certainly he should be obligated to pay in this instance. Where it says, the yod of ominidin, the yod kinidon. Wait a minute. You can't make a kavachomer to make something more chamor than the item that you're learning from. Malahalan tam chatzi nezek. Just like by the case of a lay person that damages another lay person, if they were a tam, you'd pay chatzi nezek. Hachanami chatzi nezek. So to over here, it should also be a case of chatzi nezek. So that would not explain the position of Rabbi Shimon ben Asya. This kavachomer, which is extrapolating from hejot and saying logically if hejot is this way, certainly when it's to hekdesh, it should be that way. But if you invoke the principle of dayod avom inidin liot kenidon, which is that the item you're learning from is the maximum that you could be exposed for, or the maximum that you can learn. And so therefore, if the example by which, or the cow that you want to learn from is hejot to hejot, over there, tam pays chatzi nezek. That means also over here, when you're making a kal v'chomer, that should be true with regards to hekdesh, that means that it should have the same din as the hejot to hejot, which means chatzi nezek. Yet we see Rabbi Shimon Asya says, yo chayav nezek shalim. Elohama Reish Lakish. Rather, Reish Lakish says, Akola yu bichlal nezek shalem. Everything was included in nezek shalem. Rashi over here brings two versions of explanation of this Gemara. And most of it revolves around the word Ella. I have spoken about in the past that the word Ella always means that we're rejecting what we said before. And then we're moving on to the next scenario or the next way to solve the problem. So that's the question here, how literally to take that, which is, so when Reish Lakish says Ella over here, is he rejecting the kal v'chomer, rejecting everything we've said until now and coming up with a totally different way to learn it? Or is the Ella Amar Reish Lakish building on what we've established already and trying to fill in the holes? That would be the difference in two versions of explanation that you find in Rashi. So, kol hayu bichlal nezek shalem. Everything was subsumed under nezek shalem. U'kishipiret lecha katuv re'ehu. And the Torah goes out of its way to specify re'ehu gabe tam. That is mentioned by Tom, I read you the psukim, but the word Re'eu appears only when the Torah is speaking about the issue of Tom. And therefore, Re'eu de Tom, Mishalem Chatzin Ezek, Minchal de Hekdesh, Ben Tom, Ben Muad, Mishalem, Nezek Shalem. So it is his Re'eu that has a din of Tom that pays Chatzin Ezek. Michlal, from that you would infer, De Hekdesh, Ben Tom, Ben Muad, Mishalem, Nezek Shalem. You pay a full Nezek in that case, whether it's a tam or muad, meaning that the exclusion from re'ehu says you don't get to utilize the dispensation of tam. The dispensation of tam is only relevant to a hejot and re'ehu, which is what the Torah specifies. But anyone else is not governed by that. On the other hand, here, what we're suggesting is that once you say that you're not included in that parshia of tam, that leaves you as a muad all the time. And that's what is explaining, or that's what the reason behind Rabbi Shimon ben Asya's position is that you're a mu'ad because you don't have the dispensation, you don't have the way, you don't have the exemption for being a tam that gets you out of the problem. So according to Rashi's first explanation in Reish Lakish, the Ella comes to undermine everything that we said before. What we said before is the source for exempting hekdesh from any of these dinim of hezek is because of the word re'ehu. And the Ella of Reish Lakish comes to reject that basis and say that re'ehu is lav dafka. We don't have to take it so literally. Re'ehu is not the determining factor as to why hekdesh is excluded from these responsibilities when it comes to nezek. Ella, the reasoning that the reason that Hekdesh is patur when it damages another party is because of the fact that by the Shur Muad it says, V'uad b'ba'alav, and there are no ba'alim when it comes to Hekdesh. And by Tam it says, V'chi gof shor ish. So shor ish, below shor Hekdesh. So for that reason, Rashi says that Reish Lakish believes Hekdesh does not compensate when it comes to Nezik that it's done, because it's not relevant to the parshiot of Muad and Tam. On the other hand, the reason that the individual is chayav when they damage a shor shel hekdesh is based on the pasuk that we find by the Muad, which says, shalem yishalem shor, that you have to make payment. That means that the default status of any situation is that you need to be making compensation or paying for the damage that is done. So therefore, the hedyot, the layperson, is chayav for the damage that they did to Hekdesh. And then when the Torah, by Tam, comes along and specifies that there is an exception to that rule, or an exemption where you do not have to pay Nezek Shalem and only Chatzi Nezek, over there, the Torah specifies Re'ehu, that only Re'ehu is entitled to that exemption. It's only when you've damaged Re'ehu are you entitled to that exemption or that reduction to Chatzi Nezek, but if it's not Re'ehu, you're not entitled to that. And therefore, it goes back to the default status, which is what we learned from Muad, as anytime you do damage, you pay Nezek Shalem. And so therefore, the default is that when the layperson damages Hekdesh, then you pay Nezek Shalem, and that's both B'Muad as well as B'Tam, because that's the default status, and they're not granted that exemption or the reduction that applies to a Tam, because there it says Re'ehu, and the reduction or exemption only applies to Re'ehu and not to Hekdesh. On the other hand, Rashi brings a second lashon from his Rebbeim, which says that the Ella of Reish Lakish is not undermining everything we've said until now, but simply rejecting the Kal V'Chomer as the source for the fact that a layperson that damages Hekdesh is Chayav. And so therefore, the Ptur, or the exemption for Hekdesh paying a layperson when they do damage to them derives from the word Re'ehu. And so therefore, Shor Shel Hekdesh, Narach Shor Shel Yedioth is Patur. On the other hand, in reverse, where it's a layperson Shor that is damaging that of Hekdesh, is because of the fact that the Torah wrote Re'ehu by Tam and not by Muad. Because had it wanted to exempt you completely from having to make compensation or restitution to Hekdesh when the layperson's animal damaged that of Hekdesh, then it should have written Re'ehu by Muad, and then you would have known that you're totally patur. The fact that it put Re'ehu by the Tam and not by the Muad tells you that the Re'ehu here is coming to say that the dinim of Tam are not applicable to a layperson damaging Hekdesh, but rather it has the same status as that of a Muad, which is that you are chayav for the damage that you've done to Hekdesh. But not only are you chayav for the damage, you chayav nezek shalem in that case. And as Tosfot enhances this by saying, "Delo chayve rachmano b'muad ele makom shechayev b'tam," that the only place the Torah obligated someone with a muad is when they're also chayav with regards to tam. So therefore, you can't learn that the word re'ehu comes to exempt you completely in the case of tam, because then you'll have this dislocation, which is that tam would be totally patur when a layperson's animal damages hekdesh. Whereas when it comes to Muad, it's going to be Chayav Nezek Shalem. And Tosfot says there's a correlation between the Tam and the Muad. And we know for sure Tam, the late person that damages Hekdesh, is Chayav, because Re'ehu is not written by Muad. And therefore, Tam, when it comes to exclude Hekdesh through the word Re'ehu, it must be coming to tell you that you're Chayav and not Patur, because then you're a Chayav both by Tam and Muad, which is consistent with this idea that if you're Chayav Muad, you also must be chayav b'tam, or if you're chayav b'tam, you also must be chayav b'muad. That whenever you're chayav b'muad, it must be that you're chayav b'tam. And the same is true in reverse. The fact that Re'ehu exempts Hekdesh that damages a layperson, since by tam you are patur, by definition, then you're also going to be patur the gabei muad. Tosfot notes that therefore, shabali ftor the gamrei tam, the Hekdesh be'ejod became the tam patur, muad nami patur. Since by tam you are patur, so too by Muad you will also be patur. So therefore the word Re'ehu teaches us everything. The fact that Re'ehu is written tells us that by Tam, Hekdesh does not have to pay a lay person. And since they're patur by tam, they're also patur by muad. And in the opposite side, by the lay person that is damaging the Hekdesh, over there, the fact that Re'ehu appears by tam and not by muad says that by muad, a lay person is chayav. Therefore, by tam, the understanding of Re'ehu or the exemption that is a lay person damaging Hekdesh has a different din, must be a different din lechiyuv, because you'd only be chayav by muad if you were also chayav by tam. That's why you pay nezek shalem both by tam and muad according to this reasoning. The difficulty with that second pshat is that the re'ehu that's found by tam, we're learning in just the opposite way with regards to its extrapolation to muad, or why it's not written by muad. In the case of the exemption for hekdesh when it damages a layperson, we're saying, oh, it says it by tam, so that must be also be the din by muad. On the other hand, by the case of a layperson that damages hekdesh, we're saying, well, re'ehu is written by tam and not by muad, to show you that muad you are chayav. That also tells you by tam, you also must mean re'ehu is coming to tell you that you are chayav. On the other hand, in the first pshat in Rashi, the exemption for hekdesh doing damage to a layperson comes out of each pasuk, one by tam and one by muad. One is muad b'ba'alav, by the muad, and he go shor ish, which is written by the tam. And that gives you the exemption of hekdesh from having to pay a lay person. On the other hand, the lay person's obligation to pay hekdesh is because the din of tam or chatzi nezek was only said by re'ehu, was not said the gabe hekdesh, and the default status is if you don't have that exemption, then you're chayav nezek shalem. Obviously, the weakness in that pshat is the fact that the Gemara never mentions muad b'balav or shor ish as being the pturim over here. But the fact that it uses the word Ella in the Gemara makes Rashi in that explanation assume that the Gemara has rejected what it said until now and has come up with a different methodology. And this is the different methodology that Rashi is proposing, the Reish Lakish is suggesting over here. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Lamed Chet Amud Aleph.